welcome to another edition of the Gaming Gang Extra. This time around, I'm joined by John Kranz, the founder of the ConSimWorld website, as well as the man behind ConSimWorld Expo, held annually in Tempe, Arizona, and the head of ConSim Press. In case you don't know, I'm your host, Jeff McAleer. If you're a wargamer of any stripe, then I have to assume you're familiar with the website consimworld.com. It's a fantastic resource for all things related to the wargaming community, and I'm pleased to be joined today by the man behind all things ConSimWorld, John Kranz. Hi, John. Thanks for taking some time out to join me today. How are you doing?
Well, good, Jeff. Thanks for giving me a call today. Looking forward to speaking with you.
I know that a lot of our visitors to the Gaming Gang are also very, very familiar with your website as well, ConSimWorld. And I wanted to discuss how that got started, because it is pretty much the destination if you want to find out about war games.
Well, I appreciate that. I'd say it goes back to then, probably around the mid-90s, and it was around the time when the internet and websites were just starting to come online. Not too many game publishers were online yet. It gave me sort of an entry where I partnered with a few publishers, and they were all very accommodating of companies like Decision Games, Clash of Arms, GMT Games, etc. And the way things started, which is probably what the technology support at the time was, simply nothing more than scans of box front covers, box back covers, and samplings of maps and counters. So I had something, it was a website, it was called the Virtual Wargamer Headquarters, and basically, it was just a collection of games that were currently on the market that these publishers were willing to have an online presence to help market. So in exchange for receiving product, I would spend that time scanning all the components and then providing the necessary links under their company name.
Oh,
so
okay.
Very rudimentary work. That was really all that was available at the time, since we're going back probably almost 20 years, I'm sure.
Right.
That's how far we're going back.
I was into computers at that point in time, and I was online as well. In fact, I believe the first modem I had, gosh, I think it was 2400 baud, maybe 1200, something along those lines.
Feel your pain. I finally remember the, what it's called, the Genie days, back when Genie was sort of a popular site, and it sort of blew up when they changed their business plans and pricing model change, and everybody pretty much had to abandon Genie. But it was the first active online community that I'm aware of that had a wargaming focus. So it's missed, but I mean, that was the initial step, I think, was Genie. Genie shut down. AOL didn't quite take off.
Right.
And then that's when that website option showed up for the first time that I pursued.
How did ConSimWorld get started?
Got started probably, I think, just with my own background and interest in the hobby. I've been more of a, I don't know how you say this, a more of an onlooker than an active gamer.
Okay.
So I've always enjoyed, say, meeting designers and going to conventions, and just, I always got a big thrill out of watching games being played. And it's not because I wasn't a good player or anything. I just really like just being able to go around the tables and see what's played. I remember my first formal involvement with the hobby. I was maybe 16. And I formed a game club that grew to like 50 members. So I think I had a knack for, I love getting people together and watching them enjoy the hobby. And I didn't know it at the time, but I guess it's how I sort of started promoting in a small way community. And I just really took to it. I really enjoyed it, and I enjoyed everybody I met. And it just sort of grew from that, I think. It grew from that fact and how the internet made it possible for online connections and an online community to sort of take hold, which is really what the ConSimWorld Forum's all about. So I've always been interested in helping promote the hobby and seeing people get enjoyment out of it.
I know exactly where you're coming from too, because I really enjoy sitting down and talking with designers or people behind the scenes at the various companies like Lock and Load and GMT, Victory Point Games, and so on and so forth. And of course, I love the game too, don't get me wrong, but I enjoyed that business side, that creative side too.
And it's basically exactly, it's like what you're doing. There's so many people contributing to the hobby today through the internet, and you've got a great service you provide. And of course, Board Game Geek is huge and provides an invaluable service. And there's many other podcasts. And even,
oh, sure.
Even now we're getting more and more to these videos, et cetera, that are quite popular. So it's just great to see so many people rolling up their sleeves and enjoying being able to contribute back to the hobby. And I know a lot of people appreciate that. And I know the people at ConSimWorld appreciate all the work you do, Jeff.
Well, thank you. So. And Elliot, my partner in crime, of course,
exactly. He's,
and we've got our other correspondents as well.
Absolutely. Definitely Elliot and everybody else that's worked with you have been very helpful, and they're always enjoyable to listen to.
If I could ask, John, what were some of the games growing up that really struck your fancy, you enjoyed playing quite a bit?
I was just sort of awash, not really knowing what the hobby was all about, because I had an older brother. He was 5 years older than me, so I was maybe only 11 or 12, maybe 11 at the time, I'd say. And he was 16 in high school, and he was doing things with Blitzkrieg and Guadalcanal Tactics 2, and I had really no clue about them. I was probably still a little too young. I just couldn't get a grip on it.
Sure.
And like any younger brother who always looks up to his older brother and wants to play, you know, you want to play with your older brother, basically. So I guess that's sort of how that was my way to spend more time with my brother. So he actually sort of introduced me to the hobby because he was playing with a high school buddy. So I did that with him. And again, just Blitzkrieg was the big monster game, I guess, for us at the time. And Panzer Blitz seemed too complicated. I don't even know if I even played that with him, but it seemed back then to be just so complex to me as a 12, 13-year-old. And unfortunately, my brother and I, one day we got all excited and decided to go to a toy store. We finally had some money to buy a game. And due to that purchase, my brother left the hobby and never looked back. He never touched another game. We bought Kriegspiel. Okay. And he was so disenchanted with it, and I was disappointed, of course. I didn't like it either. I thought it was a joke, but he just never came back to the hobby. I sort of lost my one connection to the hobby, so I was sort of on my own after that. Ultimately, I discovered SPI, which was the holy grail to me. That was like my eyes, you know, the angel started singing, and it's like, oh my god, I didn't know this existed. And I was a little old. I was a little older too, probably. I was about 15 by then, and I'll never forget that moment, the first SPI game. Like, that was a life-changing moment, as Dr. Phil would say.
That's so funny that you mentioned that there was one title that drove your brother out of the hobby.
Oh, absolutely. depressing as hell for me. It's horrible for a kid to be so excited. It's because we were so excited. It's like anything, you go on a vacation, you get all your high hopes, like, oh, we can't wait to buy this game, and we're going to just have the greatest time together. And it was such a joke. And he obviously took it to heart, and he was so disgusted, I guess, with it. And that was it. You know, it was pretty sudden and strong reaction on his part, and I decided to stick with it alone.
I remember actually picking up Avalon Hill's Magic Realm.
That's a very popular game.
It was
complex too.
Right, and it was one of the first games I had picked up, and I was probably 12 at the time, and I was starting to dabble into Dungeons and Dragons. Just really starting to get popular with a lot of people, and I remember opening the box up and wondering myself, what in the world is this?
Yeah, that was sort of a crazy looking game, especially like you said, when we're 12 years old or whatever, you got to think our mindset, and this is before all the games we know about today. So our brains have advanced with the hobby, with all the designers, what they've done. But back then, yeah, I mean, like I said, Magic Realm to me would look scary, scary complex. Like, I wouldn't get it. Like a tile placement or whatever. It's like,
I wouldn't get it. Tons of different things, right?
Exactly. So I can imagine how you probably reacted. And today, if it was us opening Magic Realm today, we'd be like, okay, I sort of get it. No big deal.
Yeah, I actually ended up opening it, checking it out, and it went under my bed. That was the last I recall ever touching that game. But thankfully, it did not turn me away from the hobby.
That's funny. You made me laugh because you said you tucked the game under your bed. I think the first moment I ever gave my parents where they wondered if their kid was okay. I had a little bedroom to myself because my brother had his own room, and I wheeled in the ping pong table from the family room. Snuck it somehow after 10 minutes. I snuck the ping pong table into my little small doorway of my bedroom, and I guess my parents came in like that night or something, and they had a ping pong table set up. And since it was a small room, my bed was now under the ping pong table, mattress only on the floor, with terrible Swiss sword set up. And I think my dad or mom just looked at me and shook their head like, what in the hell is happening to our son? It's like, this is the weirdest, most bizarre, you know, he's becoming a teenager. He's doing things we do not understand. And I look back, I just laugh about that.
My parents never could understand the fascination either. I never played any games with my parents, except until recently, probably within the last 2 years, I have actually gotten my mom into some of the gaming. In fact, she loves Twilight Struggle.
Oh, that's great that she enjoys a game like that.
Exactly. It's not just playing Carcassonne or some of the really gateway Euros. Yeah, it's a fairly deep game, and she can put up a fairly good fight.
You've met your challenge. There you go.
Now, I don't think she'll be making her way out to the Con Sim World Expo this year, which is going to be in Tempe, Arizona, and it is from June 25th through July 1st. Am I correct, John?
That's absolutely correct. It's June 25th, starts on a Monday, and ends on Sunday, July 1st, and usually people tear down early, so usually Sunday's more of a travel day, so effectively Saturday is we go out with a big bang on Saturday. which I believe that's June 30th, and we have our game auction that night as well. So it's a fun, 5 days of action, basically, and it's our 12th year. This is our 12th anniversary event, which I can't believe. Time just really flies by, so we've got great sign-ups already taking place and great publisher support. So it's less than 2 months away from this time in talking to you, so we're starting to gear up for it right now.
Well, I plan on being there. I do have to ask, will you be having Alan Emmerich host the auction once again?
I believe so. Alan's become a real regular for us. He was actually, if I'm not mistaken, I believe he's been to every event we've held. I think he's been with us every year. So it's just great to have Alan. Alan is he's always been an auctioneer too. He goes back beyond the 12 years of the expo. He goes back many more years than that, obviously. And he worked with an auction group, and he's very entertaining. And
yes, he is.
Everybody loves his shtick. He's great. Only Alan could do that, too. So, we're real excited to have Alan coming back for sure. And he'll be representing Victory Point Games.
Of course,
as a publisher now. So we're really happy to have him.
I think it's important to mention, as far as with CSWE, I guess we would call it, it's a very unique convention. It's not huge. It's a good size convention. The hotel it's at is very, very nice. It's the Tempe Mission Palms. And the location's great because you walk outside the hotel and there you are. You're downtown Tempe. So there's plenty of eateries, or like myself, I like to enjoy a cold beverage. So you can pop right on out.
Plenty of that around. We're near ASU. We're near the campus of Arizona State University. We're right on top of it. So absolutely correct. Plenty of cold beverages to be had.
First time I ever saw anything as far as the expo itself, it was a few years back. It was probably maybe your fourth or fifth time you had had it. And I was out with some friends at the Irish pub that
right next to the hotel. It's on the hotel property, really, it seems. Yep.
And I saw a big banner and I thought, what in the world is going on over the hotel? So I strolled over to take a quick look.
You were brave.
Yeah, all my friends thought I was nuts, but I'm wondering what that is. But one thing about the expo is it's a very relaxed atmosphere, is the first thing that I've noticed. And it's not just go, go, go. Everything's scheduled down to the second, and you're not inundated with different vendors selling their wares. In fact, I do believe that the vendor area is only open for about an hour and a half or 2 hours each day.
Yes. There's a reason behind the madness, but it's all by design. Absolutely. Absolutely. So I guess, should I mention the expo a little bit then? I guess that's a good segue.
Sure. Yeah,
so,
let's talk about that.
Yeah, so yeah, the formatting, the way
No,
it came...
I'm sorry, John, we're not discussing the expo.
we'll move on. We'll talk more about Magic Realm. Let's talk about Magic Realm strategy. I'd be glad to share, especially for those, if anybody's listening that hasn't been to the expo before, they're thinking about maybe as a first convention. I definitely recommend our venue just because, like you said, it's a very, I guess the word is it's a very lax, but it's a communal environment. It's a very strong knit community.
Yes.
While we've all known each other for many years now, because we've had this event every year, pretty much everybody across the board gets really excited and loves greeting new first-time attendees.
Of course.
So that's really what the hobby's about anyway. It's introducing new people to the... Matter of fact, I introduced a new person to the hobby just today. I was at a lawyer's house, a friend of my wife's. So he went to Gettysburg, visited, and so I introduced the hobby to him today and left him a few games. And that's what it's about. The expo's about, usually for the Grognard, it's somebody that knows what SPI means, or Avalon Hill, etc. Mm-hmm. It's the monster size games as well for most. It's a specific experience. It's an experience to sit down with a set group of people, and typically it's for a larger game. I'd say more than half of our folks are definitely gearing up to play a specific game that will take several days.
Yes,
for sure. But for the same token, and this is part of the lax environment, about half of our group, say about 100 out of the 200, will do open gaming only. We have just about 30, 40 different games that are typically played every year, all types of one-map games. We have tournaments like Down in Flames from GMT that are quite popular. And we do a few tournaments here or there, but we try very hard to and this is what we do right now. We have a website that's really focused and dedicated on helping people align themselves with others that want to play the same game. Mm-hmm. So we have a sign-up sheet where we specifically ask, what game or games do you want to play? And everybody can sort of find out who's looking to play the same thing, and then they can do some pre-event coordination to get together. And it's really enjoyable because, again, it's not so much competitive play, I guess is the word I would use. We're not doing a bunch of tournaments. Mm-hmm. WBC is the place to go for that. That is probably the premier event of the hobby that Don Greenwood puts on, and they have a huge attendance, and they're very, very successful. And, you know, that's a lot of tournament play. Typically, that's the focus. Our focus, and it's we mean to be complimentary, obviously, and that is I'm very interested in games maybe somebody's never had a chance to play because it would take a dedicated span of time to do, several days for sure. So we started with the monster game focus, but we branched out, and equally we support, you know, the smaller pickup games as well. But it's a very lax, casual environment. The hotel is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that's very important to me because I'm looking at a second site is I want everybody to feel really comfortable. So something as simple as having ergonomic chairs.
Sure.
I go to all these game conventions and I hate the fact you've got cafeteria style, these cheap chairs that will kill your backs inside of a few hours. And that's typically what most hotels still have. They have their banquet chairs. And to me, that's really important. I mean, I come from business and running conferences. I want everybody to be really comfortable and rested, feel rested, even though they're playing games for several days. So we have just a wonderful ballroom, the best comforts I can imagine of any convention I've been to. I haven't seen anything with the comforts we have. So I definitely invite, you know, I hope people, if they're on the fence, they will definitely consider coming out, and they'll meet a lot of publishers and see a lot of playtest games going on because of the designers that are there. So we have it's almost like a working session. A lot of publishers show up to do some business and do a lot of playtesting as well.
And that, I think, is one of the really nice things as well about the expo is you actually have an opportunity to sit down and play a game with one of the designers, and you may even end up playing a game with a designer who didn't even design that game.
Yeah, that happens a lot. Our attendance list, if you go online, I should mention the website, it's expo.consumworld.com. If you go out to that site, you can look at the attendees already signing up, as well as publishers. And yeah, we have a lot of publishers there. And likewise, like you said, Jeff, there's definitely a lot of designers show up. So we probably have at least 15, 20 game designers. I'd say 10-15% of the attendees are professionally involved and working on new projects right now. So for them, it's really valuable because they want to meet new people and it's close to blind testing in a way where, you know, somebody that's never seen the game before, they can take them through the paces. And it's always exciting for publishers and designers to be able to find willing folks to try out their new games, and it gives them a chance to make them better. So everybody wins in the end.
Willing victims.
That's right. Willing victims. Absolutely. That's what we're all about.
I would also point out to people who may be kind of on the fence as far as attending the expo as well, I had noticed quite a lot of pickup gaming going on a little later on in the day, and it wasn't always war games that were being played. I saw quite a few people playing Fantasy Flight games like Battlestar Galactica and things like that. I got into a game of the card game Seven Wonders, which is from Asmodee. Of course, the main focus is on conflict simulation games. It's a great way to be exposed to some of those war games, but no one's going to throw you out the door if you decide to break out one of your favorite games like Settlers of Catan and start playing at a table.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the gameplay of, you know, say somebody signing up for a monster game, that's a commitment because you've got several people at your table, but, you know, they're always taking, you know, there's always going to be breaks at night, especially late at night, typically even with the monster games, we find sometimes even the monster players will have a small one map off to the side because if they can't do something for a half hour, an hour for their turn to come up, you know, it depends on the game, right? You know, there's games where you can't touch a piece for quite a while. So we're flexible that way. So you can have a side game going on. And like you said, people are there to have a good, relaxing and fun time. And that's usually late at night after you've had your cold refreshments, Jeff, by the way.
Of course.
You've had your cold refreshments, people will come up and we'll do all kinds of pickup games. They might not go back to that monster game. It could be something completely different because we're not rushed for time. We've got, you know, at least 5 full days of gaming, and that works out pretty well. Even if you don't finish a monster to the last turn, players usually always end the game knowing who was going to win or who won.
Sure, right.
So it's reached a conclusion in their mind that they're happy with, that they, I finally got a chance to play that huge monster game. Maybe even the designer was there, by the way, which makes it added fun. So yeah, definitely there's definitely those crossover games, your Euro style games, card games, you name it. A lot of the stuff you see talked a lot about on Board Game Geek, all those types of games are played as well. I just don't really promote it as much, obviously, with the focus being more on the classic style war games, but that's because I know people know that's there as well. You know, we know
that. And a lot of people probably do travel to the expo simply because they know they're going to get a chance to play some of their favorite classic games that maybe they don't get to do at home.
Exactly. And then one point I didn't mention is about the designers and the publishers there. The reason we do like only an hour and a half max, or maybe 2 hours of the exhibitor sales room, is these publishers are also the designers typically, and they want to be playing games and
exactly
getting their our new games ready. I don't feel comfortable. You know, we have attendance. It isn't like WBC. We're not, you know, near 1,000 plus or whatever. We're 200 to 225 typically every year. So I don't want somebody sitting down for 8 to 10 hours in a room with little traffic all day.
Right.
I'm going to compress that down to an hour and a half. And those folks love it. They get a chance to be with everybody in the main ballroom playing games or doing perhaps some playtesting. But also they've got that compressed time of an hour and a half of very heavy cycles, very active sales cycle, which is fun for them that they can, you know, be literally, you know, they get a line of people buying product versus one every hour coming through for eight hours. That's no fun.
Sure. So, and then they get back to their own gaming. Exactly. So of course,
if it was 1,000 or 2,000 people, then I'd think about, okay, maybe we have to do something different. But for the nice size we have of around 200, it works out really well just being open every day for an hour and a half or 2 hours and then letting the designers and publishers mingle with everybody in the ballroom and do gaming with them there.
I do know that you're already going to have the Down in Flames ongoing tournament that you've had previously, which anybody can come along, even if they've never played the game, because I know it's no longer produced by GMT. It's now Dan Burson Games. It's a little different, though. It's the GMT version that's played in the tournament. You also have another ongoing tournament that's going to be this year, and that's for the Hunters.
Yeah, drum roll. That's my segue. So
yes.
I'm going to mention that the Hunters is something coming from Consum World. And actually, I don't use the word Consum World. It's I use the publishing brand name is Consum Press. It's the second title that I'll be producing and enjoy doing Beta Farm. And I actually released Beta Farm at Expo in 2010. That was my first foray in publishing. Had a lot of fun doing it. And this one I'm particularly excited about because it's so different than a typical game I've played. This is a solitaire game. It's the Hunters, which is the German U-boat campaign, 39 mm-hmm. through 43. And we're going to have finished pre-publication versions there. I know the game's coming out probably about 2 months after the Expo. And GMT, just like I did with Betafum, I partner with GMT in doing the publishing and printing through GMT's supplier. So I'm on schedule with them to get the game out in the fall this year. We'll have ample sets of the game. Gregory Smith, who's the designer, it's Expo, right? So of course he'll be there.
Sure.
Another designer will be gracing us. So Greg's going to be there and he'll be hosting. And this is a drop-in, just like you said, Jeff. So I hope you'll drop in and try it.
Definitely.
And I know at GMT Games Weekend West was just 2-3 weeks ago and Greg had a bunch of people doing drop-ins of the game there. And, you know, I'm really excited. People seem to really take to it. So I think it's hit a sweet spot. Well, I know it's hit a sweet spot because I didn't expect the pre-orders to be anywhere near their at with GMT. I'm blown away by the support that everybody's already giving this game. And I'm really happy for Greg, who's a designer. So I'm really most happy for him because it's his creation. So we've got about nearly 1,000 pre-orders now already. So we're obviously gearing up to make this a really high-quality release because we know there's going to be 1,000 eyes unwrapping this puppy in the fall. And we want everybody to be happy and have confidence in the product that I'm bringing to market. We don't want any disappointed people out there. So a lot of my time spent right now, besides Expo, is I'm involved in the rewriting of the rules completely, like I did with Betafarm. I'm doing the rules and also final components, so sort of a development hat.
Nice.
And it's going very well. It's going very well. And I know nobody wants to hear that. They want the game. But I don't rush stuff out, obviously, because it's got to be worth the wait. And I know people are waiting, so we're going to make sure it's worth it. And I think people will love it. I'm going to be hosting some online tournaments. So if people buy the game or enjoy playing it with a friend, I'll have through the Consum Press website a way people can turn in the results and we can keep a tournament board going. And basically, it's a way to share stories of how their patrols went. It's really a narrative. What's great about it, it's a truly a narrative game experience. It's very tense because you are that U-boat captain of mm-hmm. a single sub. And 39 through 43, things get a lot tougher as you go through 40.
Oh, sure.
If anybody's read The Iron Coffins, I recommend reading the personal memoirs of the book called Iron Coffins, because that is what the game is all about. It's very tense, and you want to basically survive. And that's something I'm looking forward to. People are sharing their game experiences with others online once we get the game out on the market. And we'll be playing it at the Expo.
I have to say one of my favorite movies of all time is Das Boot.
Das Boot. That's one of my all-time favorite movies, too. So when I heard about this project, I go, I wonder if it's sort of like this. And then I said, yeah, this feels pretty good because as a player of the game, I get very upset when things go badly. So mm-hmm. I'm like, I am emotionally vested in the game, which is, I think, a good sign. I get pissed if something goes wrong. So, and I think others would get upset too pretty easily. So I feel there's a connection to this, to playing this thing. It doesn't feel so detached. And I was going to say Das Boot is it. That's sort of the yardstick to look at. But after I read Iron Coffins, that sort of made Das Boot look like a E. Disney World ride.
Right, sure.
It's just, The Iron Coffins is an incredible, compelling story. I read it about 3 times in the last month. It's a quick read, but it's really engrossing. And it's like that Das Boot experience. Think of it 10 times worse, and how this person survived it to tell the story is pretty amazing. So that's what we're sort of shooting for with this game. We want it to be something you enjoy playing and sort of have an emotional connection with what you're trying to accomplish in the game. So that's the goal.
Folks can look forward to getting to enjoy the playtest at the expo, and then sometime in September is when we should see the Hunter's launch.
It's going to be in the fall. I'm not sure how that date. It's basically, we're definitely on GMT's print schedule, and Tony Curtis is in charge of all that. He knows the specific date. The only thing I really need to know about is when I have to have all the materials in.
Sure.
So I have that date, but I'm probably guessing more towards probably October, because this is being published overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand it can take up to 8 weeks sometimes for the freight to arrive.
Right.
So I'm thinking it's going to be maybe more like October timeframe. But the good news is, with where we are at development right now, and we're at the final stages now, for example, of getting final approval on what's called the main U-boat display, which we have 8 different U-boat models, which are the most popular German U-boats. That's really the heart of the system. You're tracking your status of your U-boat.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just finishing now. It looks like we're getting in the final throes of the final version's going to look like. Plays very smart. I'm big into game mnemonic. I want things to be easy to remember, or information to be right there for you.
Sure.
We're going to have all final components. So if you're looking to see what the game's like, we'll have the final, we should have like the final rules draft there. We'll have all the final charts, and everything's going to be basically done, except for it's not just that professionally printed version yet, because that's being done overseas. But
mm-hmm. Right.
we should have final artwork on pretty much everything at the expo.
Very nice. Shifting gears a little bit, going back to the Consim World website, there were a couple other things that I did want to mention for people who, gosh, I would think they should be familiar with Consim World. Maybe they've never really delved too deeply into it. It's not just consimworld.com. There's also a social network and an extremely popular forum.
Yeah, I'd say the forum's the heart of the services we provide. I think when anybody thinks of Consim World, the first thing they think about, it's the forum. It's something we've had that's been in existence over 12 years. And you can look at some of the individual game discussion topics. Some are over 10,000 postings.
My gosh.
So, you know, the wealth of information and the library of knowledge we've captured for some games that are really popular is pretty incredible. So the forum by far is the most popular, most heavy trafficked site that we have. About a year or two ago, I started sort of a social outlet.
Mm-hmm.
So I came across some new web services being offered. It basically allowed one to set up a community. I think this social network, which is at social.consimworld.com, is really a very informal way just to chat about whatever. It gives everybody a chance to have their own blogs there and do their own postings at will, which is unlike our news desk. Our news desk, I just do all those postings myself.
Right.
Basically supporting publishers or folks like yourself that
sure.
are contributing to the hobby. So we got all these different websites. So the hub is consimworld.com, but you can go out to the forum site at talk.consimworld or the social site, and they're all pretty much interconnected. Gives people a chance to decide what method they prefer as far as where they like to hang out. But I think the forum's the most popular right now. Although Board Game Geek, we've had a lot of people, to be honest, come over from Board Game Geek the last 2 months. No particular reason why. I think maybe there was a restructuring of the war game category on that site. I think some people were a little
less than pleased.
I guess we would say. I think I was part of those discussions, and I said, please chill out, because Board Game Geek is extremely important and a much bigger fish than we are. I'm sure there's good reasons why they're doing it, and if there aren't, they'll change it. But, you know, Board Game Geek's always going to be there for us, and it's an invaluable service. So, but because of that, people still came over and said, you know, I'm going to go over here for a while. And I'm hoping all these people obviously are still on Board Game Geek as well. They're not leaving Board Game Geek. I wouldn't want them to do that at all. That'd be a big mistake. But it's nice having more people, for sure, on the social site and getting to know some of these folks that maybe haven't gone on the forum as much because they don't like, say, the user interface of the forum. They think it's too old school, so they don't want to mess with it. It's nice to maybe bring them over to the social site instead.
I was going to ask that about the forum because I have heard some chatter that it may not be the most easy to navigate through. Are there some changes going on with the forum, or are there some that are planned in the future? Because I thought I ran across that somewhere.
Yeah, it's something I announced. What I've done up to now is I've just made small changes. There were some requests that users had, some simple requests like reordering the navigation a little bit of where the buttons were, that it wasn't what they wanted. Really what's happened is there's a new new, and it's on basically on hold. There's a new version of the software coming out. They're going to an open source system.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm waiting for that because basically I have to do some customization work, and definitely doesn't behoove me to pay what I'm going to have to pay to do customizations on a technology or platform that's going away. That means I would have to do it twice. So
exactly.
The good news is they're going open source this year, and I'm going to get first crack at it. So I'm supposed to be getting the code base as soon as they've blessed it for use, and I'll be switching over the form to open source. It's really just the backbones of it. Nobody's going to really notice anything. But what that will allow me to do is that there's going to be a cosmetic facelift, if you will, to the form. So once the open source change happens, I'm going to be attacking a few issues, mainly around navigation. The most obvious example and something I want to crack and get fixed is if you go over to Board Game Geek, I love their search that you have a search box at the very top where you can pick board games or publisher or designer. Right. And we're going to do like the same metaphor. We're going to have a pop-up that like lets you pick the game you want. There's a lot of people that are new to the form. They're like, I don't know exactly how to get to that game.
Exactly.
So that's the next thing I'm going to be working on, actually, is a universal pop-up. Just type one or more words of what that game title is. We'll walk you there. We'll get you there. So that will be a change that will be coming once we have it. And then my pipe dream, and I say it's a pipe dream because it's going to probably be about a year off because it's a major customization change. It's really changing how the software works. I have a vision in mind where we have topic moderators already for the form. And I hear people say all the time, or they complain, I just want to get these questions answered, or this was answered a few weeks ago, or on Board Game Geek I tried, and either, yes, I got an answer right away, or it's fragmented because it's all threaded discussion. So there's like 100 different questions. I have to find the right one. It's a little tricky.
Sure.
I want to find a solution for the form where it still has the linear approach. So it's one form for the game, which is how the Consum World form is structured. You can go into, you know, pick your favorite game. Say Magic Realm. Go in the Magic Realm. You've got the one, you got your one
I'll
discussion.
I'll have to dig it out from under the bed.
There you go. You got your one discussion of Magic Realm, but it, you know, it's not friendly. It's not user friendly for you if you say, I've either asked a question before or I want to see what questions have been asked and answered. There's no way to really pull that in unless you're doing some nice searching work with the form. So what I want to come up with is some kind of a new tabbed interface. So you can either have the starting tab, which is the general discussion, the free-flowing discussion. But then I want to introduce a new tab or a second tab. Let's call it questions, where you would literally go to that Magic Realm discussion, but you would then click on a tab that takes you to a different focused area where you simply enter your questions about the game. And you'll find out when they'll get answered. And really, for the form, it's no problem finding people to take the official role of providing answers. And the way the background of the system is going to need to work is somebody's going to have a certain admin right for certain games that they're going to be the ones answering the questions about. They'll even edit your questions in case they don't like the way the questions worded. They'll edit it for clarity.
Sure.
Maybe they'll add the rules case number for it. And they'll provide then the final answer. And then that could be the developer or the designer in most cases. But a lot of times it will be a playtester. They like contributing. So it will happen is you'll have an easy way to ask specific questions, but then there'll be another tab, and this is what I think is really important, what people want. There will be basically an FAQ that will get auto-generated based on the questions and answers that have been collected, but it's not going to be this blind dump of silly Q&A where it's every question under the sun that's been asked is going to show up on a 20-page printout on your HP LaserJet, right? It's going to be the moderator is going to have the role where they're going to approve which questions and in which order those questions have to be, and those will be promoted to this FAQ page. So the workflow is very nice. You can just talk about a game, and that's the way Consum World Forum is today. Or if you want to ask a specific question, well, you have two choices, actually. You can print out the FAQ, which is great because that's going to be the entire history of questions and answers that have been collected or offered up by whoever's manning that service. You might get your answers right there. But if not, if you can't find your answers in the FAQ, well, perfect. The system allows for you to ask your question. That person will then come in, give it the answer. And if that question was viewed as a really good question to ask, that will then get promoted to the FAQ. So everybody benefits and everybody will find that question and answer. And I want to do this for all games. This is like my dream. Right now, support for the hobby is great, but everybody works so hard to support people's questions. There's no easy way to do it. You know, everybody's really nice and answers every email or posting.
Sure.
And they're answering the same question 10 different times. So I want to put an end to that, and I want to find like a one-stop shop of, okay, Consum World, the forum. I can not only talk about games, but I can find out exactly what's been asked about it, or I can have a very easy way to ask questions and maybe even contribute to that FAQ being better. So that's about a year off, unfortunately. That is a major rewrite of the software, because I'm basically telling them to add a new service about a question-only concept, and then an administration concept behind that of who's in charge of the questions and answers,
right.
and then the FAQ generation concept. So all these things I want to bring together, and I'm mentioning it here on your show, so Board Game Geek has a lot more resources than I do, right? So they're welcome to do it first. So, I mean, this is all about supporting the hobby. So if they've got a good staff of folks there, if they, hey, John's onto something here. We could do this for Euro games. We could do this for everything. I welcome anybody to do this, because we're all in it to better the hobby, and I think this will be a very good idea for, I think I'd be excited to have it as a gamer. So
I would be, sure.
So I would like a service like that. If Board Game Geek doesn't do it in the next year, I'm looking to do it sometime next year.
Are there any last items that you'd like to toss out about Consum World or Consum Press or anything that's kind of cooking?
Well, I just want to say I'm really thankful. Just, you know, the model I have is basically, I have to take a moment, Jeff, just to thank everybody, because I do, the way this works, it is me focused on this effort, but I need to do a fundraiser, obviously, at least once a year. Mm-hmm. And we've had just a tremendous outpouring of people between the expo and especially the fundraiser. It really gives me this path to get excited about new feature ideas and new things we can do to help the hobby along. So a lot of people have contributed to me, and I just want to thank them personally. This is really needed for the servers and everything, but also just for the custom development I want to do, and I want to bring better services. So I just thank everybody for their support up to now, and if there are things they would like to see improved in the future, that's my goal. You know, I'm committed to the hobby, and obviously I'm not spending a lot of time playing games, right?
Right.
So my time is spent on the online services to try to support the community. So I just appreciate everybody's support for the fundraiser. We might go semi-annual on the drive and maybe do a big one every January. We like to do a big one every January, and the publishers were very supportive, providing free print and play games for, you know, anybody who donates got at least 2 to 4 games for free to print and play, because I want them to feel like they're going to get their money back right away. Plus, mm-hmm. they get publisher direct discounts to get more of their money back. I want them to get all their money back, whatever they donated, by saving money from publishers. So I'm just really excited about how much support, even with the economy being what it was. It's just, I really appreciate people valuing the site that much, that they would be willing to contribute a few dollars. So I just want to end just to thank everybody, to say thank you so much for your support. I love just following the discussions and then providing news stories to support the publishers. And what you do, Jeff, your podcasts and your shows are wonderful, and I love promoting those as well. So I'm excited about the future. So I'm excited after the website turns and I can add this new functionality. I think 2013 could be a very interesting year, and I'm looking forward to gearing up for that.
And I'm looking forward to seeing what you've got planned for Consum World, and of course, to the Expo coming up in June.
It'd be wonderful and exciting if somebody said, oh, I listened to the podcast, and now John didn't say anything really important, but boy, Jeff's really sold me on that Expo, and I'm going to show up. I would be very happy about that.
Well, it was interesting because when I was there last year, that was my first time.
Yes, it was.
And I had an opportunity to sit down with Alan Emmerich and quite a few of the guys from Victory Point Games and put together, about an hour-long podcast where it's just interviews with everybody, and then I finished up with Alan. And to this day, that's still our most popular extra that we've done. And we've done shows from Gen Con with people who sell way more product than Victory Point Games. But that's still our number one extra.
Yeah, and the timing's great, because I'm sure Alan and like you, I hope, everybody's in such a good mood at the expo, because we're all working our 9-to-5s or even more, or we're looking for jobs depending on, you know, what the economic situation.
Sure.
So it's a chance for us to just forget about pressures we have in our daily lives and our work lives. You know, I say everybody deserves, if you have wives out there, for those that are married that are understanding and they're willing to spoil you, it's just everybody seems to recharge their batteries no matter what kind of year they had. And, you know, I can guarantee you some people have had tough years that have come each year, and they just say, thanks, John. It's not for what I've done, but the people there are so nice. Like you said, Alan Emmerich and you and everybody else. I have full confidence in anybody going to the expo having a great time, because we have such great people there that are there to have a really, really good time. Sort of like almost like college heydays, you know, when we didn't have to worry about so much in real life, perhaps. But
exactly. The so halcyon days.
So that's what it's all about. That's what expo is all about. So it's basically doing a throwback for a few days. So I hope others will consider coming out to meet you. And of course, I'll be happy to meet them as well.
Wonderful. John, thank you so much for taking some time out today to talk about all things ConSim World. And I'm certainly looking forward to seeing you come June.
Well, thank you. And thanks for everything again you do, Jeff. I look forward to your future podcast as well.
You got it. Thanks.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Once again, a big thanks to John Krantz for taking time out to discuss ConSimWorld.com and the future of the website, the upcoming CSW Expo 2012, and the new board game, The Hunters. And thank you for giving a listen. And be sure to tune in for our next extra. And don't forget to join Elliot and I for our bi-weekly show right here on The Gaming Gang.